This is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We're at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We're literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Okay, let's just dive right in because this is a really complicated topic and we want to explore as many sides of it as we possibly can.
Go, go, go.
So you want to talk about call-out culture or cancel culture? I think they're parts of the same whole. Do you agree?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as always, we're going to be looking at this from the perspective of Black and brown queer women, from the perspective of survivors, and from the perspective of being deeply committed to the healing and the liberation of our communities. There's been a lot of criticism of call-out culture and cancel culture. And I always felt like marginalized folks need to be able to call out when harm is done to us. A lot of critics of call-out culture say that there's a better way to deal with people doing harm, but there often isn't a better way for us because we don't hold enough power to have access to alternatives. There's a reason that it was so much more rare for people to get called out on their violence and oppressive behavior before social media. So my experience of the criticisms of call-outs and canceling used to be just that it was privileged people who weren't used to hearing about their impact on marginalized folks and wanted to go back to not hearing it.
Mm.
What were your initial thoughts of call-out culture or cancel culture?
Yeah, I think what you just said, that people are critical about, you know, there's a better way to do it. One, I don't take kindly to this idea that people of marginalized groups who have just gotten the ability to be able to speak truth to power in the way that we can do through social media. Because before social media, like, if Black people writ large had a beef with, you know, something, we would just send chainmail on Tommy Hilfiger. It wasn't a very effective thing, and there's misinformation there. But now we have things like social media where we're able to actually create what we want through our own, like, lens, through our own vantage points. We're in control of the narrative. And so I don't take kindly to this idea of tone policing and telling us how to do it better, when in actuality, people who have been crossing boundaries and being bigoted and all this types of shit have been able to do that for a very long time, and they're just starting to get called out for it. So just sit the fuck down. You know, if you're if you're unhappy with the way that somebody's telling you that you're being oppressive, maybe focus on being less oppressive than telling people to stop being so mean to you.
Totally.
I don't care for that shit.
Absolutely.
I have a very short, like, attention span for that kind of conversation.
Yes. Same. But you were also complicating a little bit and talking about maybe there being something else that needs to go along with
cancel
culture.
Yeah, because I think I truly believe that there's definite need for calling people out and holding people accountable, because I think that's what the basis of call-out culture and cancel culture is that if somebody is doing something that's egregious and we collectively agree that this person does not deserve our money, our support, we need to take real tangible steps in making sure that that person no longer has the ability to thrive on being bigoted or shitty, or like with R. Kelly, for example.
Yeah.
We're calling somebody out for their atrocious behavior. Mm-hmm. He does not deserve another coin. He does not deserve any more support. He doesn't deserve any kind of, you know, taken back or to be, we're past the stage of forgiving somebody. And so my point when we had spoken about this previously was that I think that there needs to exist an opportunity for, as much as we are going to be calling people out, we're also able to call people in. And as well, as much as we want to cancel people, we need to be able to offer redemption for people who do the work to restore or to learn or to grow from the error of their ways that caused us to cancel them in the first place. I think that is kind of necessary, particularly and specifically with our own.
Yeah.
Because I'm not talking about the kind of person, you know, a cishet white dude who's a comedian, let's say like Louis C.K., for example. Let's just say Louis C.K.
Yeah.
If Louis
Specifically
C.K.,
Louis C.K.
Let's just, but like, yeah. if Louis C.K. is known to be an abuser, and women have said he's abusive and he's, you know, he's sexually exploitative and he's done fucked up shit, and Louis C.K. is just like, wah, I'm sorry, take me back. Or is that enough? Like, at some point, we have to start to think to ourselves, how many mental gymnastics am I going to do to, like, bend over backwards to allow this person to still benefit from my support.
Yes.
We have to be able to cut the legs off from underneath people.
Yes.
And so when I'm saying we need to have redemption culture and call-in culture for us, I specifically mean, you know, I don't want it to be that we can't have tough conversations with people who are maybe fearful of fucking up, or if they fucked up, they don't really know how to, like, fix the thing. I think we need to have other ways of making sure that people can, like, quote unquote, like, come back home or, like, find their way to home because they might never have been in, you know, the vicinity.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where nuance came into it for me as well. Because as a therapist, I've had many clients, all people of color, many Black, many queer and trans, express to me their fear that something they've said or done in the past before they knew better would resurface.
Yeah.
And that they would be ostracized from their social groups, maybe even unable to find work in their fields. I've also heard from a lot of queer and trans people of color who are afraid to put themselves out there, whether it's as activists and organizers or as healers or artists, and for the same reason. And I think in all of these cases, what's underlying that fear is an intense shame.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, I know I've been wary in the past of saying the wrong thing, misstepping in my language, those kinds of things that you can make mistakes. I think there needs to be room for people to make mistakes. I oftentimes feel as though there's this Puritan level expectation that we're all going to, like, know all the language and know how to do it and know how to be anti-oppressive all the time. And truth be told, we can work really, really hard to do those things. But we all are aware of, and we talk about this all the time on this podcast, that we are part of systems that are bigger than us. And so we're already, you know, we're already complicit in a lot of fucked upness, even if we're not co-signing it ourselves, we're still part of it, right? So I think grace is something that we can work more towards oftentimes. Not grace like, you're forgiven, it's fine, but like, okay, let me extend this patience for you, or this, you know, a resource like a book or whatever it might be to hopefully get that person on a track where they're not like saying the wrong fucked up thing.
Yeah, and I think what you're capturing here is that for both of us, a big part of what we like and support about cancel culture is the anti-oppressive lens of it.
Yeah.
The idea that this is a way that groups that haven't had a voice before, haven't had power, have been able to use tools like social media in order to be heard and in order to expose harms that are done against them and protect other people from those same harms.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. But then when you see people who are really committed to anti-oppression, and in particular people who are very harmed by systems of oppression, feeling so much fear and shame, I think that shows that there is something going wrong with it. There might be some stuff that's right with it, but there's also something that's going wrong.
Yes, I would agree.
So that's why I'm wanting us to explore a bit about the positives of call out and cancel culture, as well as a little bit about where it might be going wrong. I want us to talk about what some alternatives might be. I want to talk about the pitfalls of advocating alternatives to call out culture, because it's often done in a way that's really harmful to folks who are suffering and marginalized.
Yeah.
So I really want to make sure we address that. And I also want to talk a little bit about that fear and shame that some of us are feeling around it.
Let's get into it.
Awesome. So I want to start by talking about what's actually a problem with cancel culture and what isn't. Mm. So like you, I'd flag comedians as being something I'm not concerned about here. Comedians just have so much to say about cancel culture and almost none of it is worth saying.
I don't give a fuck, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about comedians who are mad that some of us don't find their jokes funny. Work harder, be better at your job.
Thank you.
I am not worried about powerful people who take a small hit to their bottom line when Twitter isn't happy with them and then recover quickly and continue to have wealth and power. I'm not worried about serial predators who get exposed for their patterns of violence. I'm not worried about white supremacists and other super hateful people who are intentionally causing harm behind the safety of anonymity and get exposed for what they do. Is there anything else you want to add about what you're not worried about or what you don't think is a problem?
I was thinking about Dr. Seuss. I'm like, I'm not worried here or there. I'm not worried anywhere.
Yes.
Okay. We're not worried about those people. They can stay mad.
Absolutely.
Yes.
What I am worried about is the level of pain that we go through in our own communities, because we care about each other so much that we're drowning in shame with times that we'd hurt someone else, but we're also lacking access to processes that would support us to be accountable. So we have all this shame and we just don't know how to make it better.
It's like all built up and stuff like that, like concentrated, packed down. We're getting all bogged down by it. And then it's like it becomes way more difficult for us to then move through it, make a choice about how we want to proceed, knowing that we've harmed somebody, especially if we don't have people around us that have the time or the patience for our mistakes.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that this is the real problem, is that it feels like most of us don't have the skills to actually deal with a lot of the harms that are relatively commonplace in our society, even if we wanted to, even when we do want to. And the people who are on the losing side of that overall are people lacking in power, because we're on the receiving end of a disproportionate amount of harm, and the people who harm us get a disproportionate amount of care and concern.
Yeah.
And so, like, thinking about sexual assault, most women and non-binary folks that I know have been sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. But I don't know anyone who's gone through a process where they felt like the person took accountability for what they did and they were able to find the support and healing that they needed in their communities.
Can you imagine? Like, I don't know one person.
No.
That's not a thing.
Yeah.
I wish it was a fucking thing.
Yeah.
But it's totally not a thing.
Yeah. So and there's the legal system. And a lot of people who engage with that are more harmed by it. So they're not getting anything that way. And then there's a lot of people who don't want to go through the legal system because of how violent the legal system is and how oppressive it is.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly why I didn't report.
But they're not able to access any other alternative either.
Yeah.
So that's really disturbing.
It is, yes.
And so this is the thing. Healthy communities can get through conflict together, and healthy communities can heal relationships between people even when violence has happened. But the problem is that our communities aren't healthy. We ask victims to just swallow their pain, and we ask them to quote-unquote forgive, and what we mean by that is go away, right? We don't offer them support for their healing. We just want the nuisance of the problem to go away, so we can go about our normal lives like we did before.
Yeah. And it's the most disturbing thing, in specifically in that example with like sexual assault. And I know my sister and my family and I were talking about this recently. Like, a known religious sort of leader in the Vancouver community has been known to being a predator, like a sexually predative person. And the amount of victim blaming,
yeah.
The amount of, and it's not as though the people who are blaming the victim don't believe that it happened. They believe it happened, but it requires them to go and do something, you know, do something with the information that they're given. And they're so uncomfortable with this idea of having to now wrestle with this person that they've respected and they've put on this pedestal or whatever it might be, is not perfect. In fact, they're very harmful. In fact, they're very disgusting. In fact, they're doing very disgusting things to people who are, you know, all that sort of thing. So it requires you to take a look at what you're investing your time in. And if you don't have, not that's just the capacity, because that sounds easy, if you don't have like the heart to, if you don't think that the person who experienced the harm, that, you know, they're worth taking a risk for, you're going to keep on being business as usual. And then that victim or somebody else standing up for themselves and calling somebody out for their shitty fucking behavior becomes, you know, a nuisance. It becomes something that, like, why couldn't you just let it be? Because this is so much easier for everybody to just keep things as it is. And now you're ruining this illusion. And I'm so concerned with that, because I think people are so ready to, like, live in a space where we're not having real conversations about real things. We'd much rather be, I don't know, playing house, playing pretend. Yeah. How does that serve anybody, though?
Absolutely. But this is the thing. I really believe that as a society or as communities, we don't know anymore how to hold space for victims and support them to heal. A lot of us don't know how to hold perpetrators accountable and hold the gravity of the harm they've caused and support them to heal so that they won't continue to cause harm. We honestly don't know. Like, even in mental health fields, a lot of times people really don't know how to support that kind of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And this also isn't a clean binary. So most of us have caused some kind of harm, because there's such a huge spectrum of the types of ways that we harm each other,
yes.
Right? It's not just about clear acts of physical violence.
Yes.
So most of us have caused some kind of harm and have likely not engaged in any process to heal that. Most of us have been harmed and have not been supported to heal or experience any kind of repair to the relationship in which we experienced that harm or the other relationships that were harmed. Because it's not just us who's hurt a lot of times. A lot of times our relationship to our loved ones is disrupted. Our relationships to our communities are disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Our relationships with ourselves and our bodies are disrupted.
And
all of
places
these things.
And spaces and just being able to navigate freely and feeling comfortable in our own skin.
Exactly. Yeah. And we don't always experience much healing in any of those relationships because people don't know how to hold space for us or facilitate that. And so if we do experience healing, it's often just within ourselves and through our own excruciating work and our own resources that make it happen. Like, I shudder to think of how many thousands of dollars I've spent on therapy and and physical therapy for all the pain my body holds.
Yeah.
Like, the cost of experiencing harm
is borne entirely on you.
Yeah.
But, like, then in the moment and then again and again and again, like, in perpetuity as you, like, work through the shits.
Exactly. So often victims get silenced because if they're silent, then the problem goes away for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why silencing is often what happens when the people who have been harmed are marginalized or when the harm is part of a system of power.
Yeah.
Because power is set up to protect itself. But then there's another way that our inability to hold space for intensity operates and gets in the way of us dealing with harm in meaningful ways. So to give an example, I recently read a really upsetting story on BuzzFeed about a 911 dispatcher who was absolutely awful and inhumane to a woman who had called and who ended up dying in a flash flood. I don't know if you, did you read this story?
No, no.
The dispatcher, it turned out it was like her last day. I guess she had quit. I don't know what was behind this, but the dispatcher was snapping at the woman and acting like there was no real danger and making the woman feel guilty for being scared. It was it was a really, really horrifying thing to read about. I didn't listen to the call itself because I mean that it would have been too awful to hear even reading about it.
Knowing the woman died.
Really, like, exactly. Yeah. Really, really disturbing. And I felt so much grief for the poor woman whose last moments were, you know, she was terrified and someone was making her feel bad for being afraid, who was supposed to be helping her. And I was just filled with rage and completely appalled at the dispatcher's behavior. And that's an appropriate reaction. Like, we should be angry about it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure.
But I was at work. I was between clients when I was reading this. And then I just stopped and imagined what it would be like if the dispatcher was my client and if she came in to deal with what she had done. And I honestly started crying because I just felt this overwhelming feeling of grief for the fact that this person had somehow gotten to this place where she had behaved so callously.
Mm.
And the consequences of her actions were so devastating, and that can never be undone.
Yeah, you have to live with that.
Yeah.
You're going to have to live with that for forever.
Yeah. And just the fact that something so tragic happened and cannot be undone no matter what.
Yeah.
It's
weighty. Like, it's not her ambivalence to this person's, like, need for safety is something that she'll have to bear the, like, burden of for forever.
Yeah. And there's a level of pain in just in witnessing something like that that's missing when we don't go further than judgment.
Like, on the part of the dispatcher.
Yes, but for the rest of us.
Like,
the
listening to this. Right, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
There is so much pain there. And discernment is important, right? So we need to know that what she did was wrong, and we need to feel that, and we need to be angry about it. But when we just stop at anger and only experience that, we flatten people and think that the wrong that they've done is all that they are, because that's actually easier than realizing that they were born innocent like the rest of us. And somewhere along the way, things went so wrong or they were so corrupted that they somehow got to this place where they could do something so horrific.
Mm.
And I think these are the kinds of questions we need to deal with when we're suggesting alternatives to call outs and canceling. It isn't just about saying, okay, well, we all make mistakes, so, like, let's everyone just move on.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, I think when you're saying this to me, I understand what you're saying in my mind, but in my heart, I'm like, I don't want to focus on the feelings of this woman who her carelessness caused somebody else to die. But it sounds like what you are talking about is having some more curiosity about where that person who would do something so egregious is coming from.
Yeah, and it's not even for the sake necessarily of that person.
Okay.
It's for the sake of everybody.
Yeah.
Of our communities. Because this is the thing. When people are committing harms like this, if we do nothing about it, they continue causing harm.
Mm-hmm.
And if we actually want a better community, a better society, a better world,
you have to respond to the harm that they've caused, or at least respond, like contain it in some way and be like, okay, what's been going on here? Because we don't want that person to keep on being their corrupted ass selves with other people.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like, I don't believe in evil. I don't believe like, oh, this one just came out of the womb evil.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we're all part of bigger systems, bigger environments, bigger contexts. And when something like that, that's so fucked up, is happening, that's not just a problem with her. I don't know where the problems came from.
Yeah, yeah.
But they go a lot deeper than her. They're a lot broader than her.
Right, so it's really easy to just kind of be like, it's her, cancel her, keep moving.
Yeah.
It's a lot more difficult to like get, you know, there's a tree and the tree breaks through the ground, but there's roots. Like, what are the roots? Where
exactly.
Are the other manifestations
exactly.
As to where it came from? Okay.
Because we could get rid of her if we don't change whatever produced her.
Yeah.
Another her is going to come along.
Yeah, and the hers all exist everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Or she's just going to continue on her way doing it again, right?
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
like we need to transform the conditions that are allowing these things to happen.
Yeah.
We need to do this extremely difficult work of looking at how did this happen? What are the rippling effects of what happened? And how do we do the slow, painstaking work of repairing wounds so deep that they could cause someone to do something so awful that our instinct is to define it as evil?
Yeah.
And then how do we do all of that while always centering and prioritizing the healing of the people who have been hurt?
Yeah, because it's like chewing gum and walking extreme.
Yeah.
It's not just saying, let's discard this person necessarily. It's saying, this person did something that's so fucked up. Look at the harm. Look at the harm that this person's caused. Let's make sure that this never happens again.
Exactly. I think that's the thing, is if we really do fully take in what victims experience, we have to act to prevent that from happening again.
Mm-hmm.
And support healing for the entire system, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's interesting. I think it kind of flips my natural tendency on its head, because most of the time I'm just like, fuck that bitch, that's wild, how can you do that shit, you're an awful person.
Mm-hmm.
Be gone, and like keep it moving. But it doesn't tend to like the greater problem at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there need to be times and there need to be spaces where we are tending to the greater problems.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to prevent, if we really care.
Yeah. Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
So I don't have all the answers to how this is going to happen. I'm so sorry. I don't have it, but I do have some thoughts about it. Mm-hmm. So first of all, if we want to build alternatives to just canceling, if we want to start repairing some of these harms, we have to have actual communities
around us.
Yeah, that's so missing. Like having tight-knit groups of people who are in deep relationship with each other, who value our relationships, who are willing to do the hard work of maintaining them even when awful things happen. That's rare.
Yeah.
A lot of us don't belong to groups like that. And it can't just be one-to-one relationships. It has to be groups, because power can wreak havoc behind closed doors. And again, these are bigger problems, right? Like when a harm happens, the effects ripple, and then every harm itself is a ripple of other problems.
Yeah, yeah.
So these are group problems. We need groups to share labor. We need groups, because this is going to be a slow, difficult process. We need groups because we need a lot of different skill sets, right? We need healers, we need mediators, we need advisors, we need, when we see how people are lacking in support, we need people who can step up and provide that support. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people want to talk about restorative justice, which is something that focuses on healing offenders and healing their relationships to the people they've harmed and healing their relationships with their communities. And people want to talk about transformative justice, which does the same and attempts to transform the conditions that led to the harm happening in the first place. But the problem is that people complain about cancel culture and advocate restorative and transformative justice, but they seem to want the people who are most harmed to be the ones to do it differently without any practical support.
As in without the community around them actually, like, you know,
yeah,
doing the work. Because, like, the victim doesn't need to do the work. That's not the victim's responsibility.
Exactly.
It's, like, everybody else that got – I would say it's everybody else that, like – let the victim down in one way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
Or allowed for the perpetrator of violence, let's say, to believe that that was okay behavior in the first place. It's like all of those enablers.
Exactly. It's like, how is it that somebody gets harmed and then we're like, okay, because you've been harmed by through no fault of your own, it's now your job to design and implement super complex new systems to heal everybody.
Yeah.
And, right? Like, that's...
that doesn't make sense.
Ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is the thing, too. A lot of people saying this who are yelling, you know, transformative justice at survivors, they don't actually want us to build those new systems, right? They just want us to go away. And so
yeah,
even if somehow, against all of the odds, we found the energy and resources and time to build all these complex new structures, those structures wouldn't work because these people saying this at us without actually doing anything to support these processes, they haven't actually bought in. Right? Like,
right.
These are processes that would need to be engaged with in super genuine, earnest ways, or they don't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why we need groups, right? Because it's too easy for people to use gaslighting to convince us that they're sorry for what they did and they're going to do better. And we need groups to spot the signs of gaslighting and to hold people accountable to do work over time and not just, like, talk the talk when it's convenient for them.
Right. I feel like we also need, I guess for me, I think when somebody is quick with the call outs,
yeah,
my heart is like, what are you doing? Like, what is the person who's calling out that other person doing about that issue that they hate so much? For myself personally, I'm always trying to recognize when I'm saying that type of shit to somebody, like, am I actually riding for that cause, or am I just finding things to, like, say my opinion on and not doing work for myself to make sure that, like, I'm also, you know, being that community, for example, for that victim. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So that's the thing. Those of us who have capacity in our communities with people who we value and who value us and who are able to meet us in our intentions for mutual good and healing, these are the places, these are the relationships where we might actually be able to find ways to support group healing when harm happens.
Yeah, and build our own capacities and reflect on what we are doing to, like, support the people that we know are marginalized by a particular issue or a particular person or whatever it might be, to really reflect and organize within ourselves and hold ourselves accountable for the times and places where we haven't actually, like, walked the walk. We've just, like, said the thing, but we actually haven't shown up for that same exact cause.
Exactly. Yeah. Because this is, as always, I don't want us to be reactive.
Yeah.
So,
like, we want us to be strategic about what we're expending our, like, energy and time and resources on.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's these people who want to criticize call out culture and cancel culture, but they don't actually want to buy into any other way of addressing harm.
Of course not.
So
it's like they're so critical of the way that we're doing things, like, do it better, do it nicer. And it's like, but what are you doing then? Like, you were telling me how I'm supposed to respond to sexual violence. You're saying it's too mean, it's too whatever, I'm ruining somebody's life. But it's like, are you actually supporting survivors in any way, or are you just really critical of survivors?
Exactly. And that's why I think we should keep calling out people when we feel like we need to and when we feel like that's the best option available to us. Because I would absolutely rather have harm named than kept secret.
Me too.
Even if
yeah.
it's not happening in, you know, the most utopian, ideal way.
Sure. But, and also, like, the question is, utopian and ideal for who?
Yes.
Like, it's not utopian and ideal for the person that has experienced the harm. It's utopian and ideal for the people who have either co-signed that the harm was okay, or who are ambivalent to the harm being done, or who have no interest in even recognizing that the harm is real.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And so when those are the people who are telling us we should don't call out or transformative justice, fuck that.
Yeah.
We need to be able to tune that out.
Yeah.
But chewing gum and walking, as we always do.
Yeah.
When we have the opportunity to build with ourselves, with other people who can meet our intentions for healing, mm-hmm. who really value us, that's when alternatives might be possible.
Yeah.
And so, like I said before, I don't have all the answers for this, but right now I want to name some of the needs I'm seeing for building new alternatives, because I think that's the first step. If we identify what we would need in order to do it, then we can start
stepping in the right direction.
Yeah, starting to get those needs met, and then we'll be able to build on that foundation. So I think we need buy-in. So we need to be talking to each other about these issues so we can find the other people who are willing to show up and stay with the really hard work. Because we need to build groups that are strong and committed enough that when these things then do happen, we have these structures built.
Yep.
I think we need resources because we live under capitalism. So we need to be able to compensate people who have skills and experiences that could support this work, because otherwise it won't get done, right? Because usually the people who are most needed in this work are struggling to pay their bills.
Totally.
We need to expand our windows of tolerance, because we need to be able to stay present with the intense grief and rage and shame and terror
and discomfort and awkwardness and
everything, all of those things. We need to be able to look at some of the most painful things that are happening in our communities and in the world, and we need to have access to our most skilled and compassionate and evolved selves while we're doing that, if we're actually going to participate in processes that address these harms.
Yeah, we can't be coming in with poor emotional intelligence trying to have conversations about how we can support those of us who experience harm. Like, we have to be willing to do the work for ourselves to get ourselves up to snuff so we can even enter the room and be useful, helpful, not more harmful.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And that requires a lot of that personal healing work so that we can show up in our communities in the ways we want to. And we need to expand our politics, because we need to have a worldview that's broad enough to hold all of the pain and violence and harm that's happening. And that also allows room for redemption when people are actually able to show up to the healing work and atone for what they've done or be accountable for what they've done without ever diminishing the harm that they've done, right?
Yeah, that's I can't even imagine what that would look like, to be 100% honest.
That's the
thing. I'm sure it exists, and I wish that I want to know that that exists, but I can't even imagine a world in which people who are committing all this harm are taking responsibility and really meeting themselves where they're at and looking at the harm that they've done and moving through it and then restoring themselves back to community and making amends in whatever way that they can, you know.
And I think that's, I agree. I can't imagine that either. And that's, I think, a couple things. One is that's why we need to start small. I think that we need to start addressing some of the more everyday harms that happen between us in our communities of people who actually do value us and care for us. Because often, you know, we might swallow our pain because, I love this person, I'm close, I don't want to cause conflict, so I'll just,
right,
you know, put it aside or whatever.
And then also then, like, in protecting that other person that we love, let's say, we're not really doing ourselves or anybody any favors, because if that person is saying something that is harmful to us and that we don't feel we want to respond to, and let's say that relationship ends, that person will continue to do that stuff like you were saying before.
Yeah.
It's not about the dispatcher. It's about, like, that dispatcher is many, many other people,
yeah,
and will be having that ripple effect on others. So when we can, taking the opportunity and being brave enough to holding people accountable in those moments, in those interpersonal moments, it's always the toughest time, it seems like, because it's not as clear cut sometimes.
Exactly.
And like, relationship and being in relationship with people sort of obfuscates and makes it difficult for us to see why it's harmful, because we're just like, oh, the relationship is good, it's good or it's bad. And it's like, well, maybe within the good relationship there's stuff that is not working or it's not healthy.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is how we can start to build our capacity to repair,
right?
and build on that. And then I know I want to look a lot more into the work that's been done and is being done on prison abolition, because I think there are some really incredible people who are working on what alternatives could look like. This is an opportunity to not reinvent the wheel. This is an opportunity right. where we don't have to have all the answers, because other people have been working on it too.
Yeah.
And we can start tapping into that and start trying to put those ideas into practice in first small ways in our groups, and build and build and build.
Yeah. Because the more we like do that with our small groups, the more we're able to like build the confidence and the skill set and the knowledge to go and do that in other spaces where we might not know the person and feel that comfort, but that like familiarity with a person that we know loves us but says the wrong thing or what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And so while we're working on getting some of those needs met and doing some of that learning, we're still going to at times need to lean on call-outs and canceling. And so in the meantime, I think for those of us who really do value anti-oppression and who really are doing our best not to harm others, we need to work through our fear and shame around being called out. So we did an episode on shame. It's called Lose It All, and that gives some tools on working through shame. But I would just add here, something that we can do when we've caused harm is show up and not run away from it.
And that's so hard.
It's so hard.
But it is the most important thing that we can do. It's the only thing that we can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's so rare and so precious in our world. And a lot of folks have never had someone who harmed them show up to take responsibility. So that's something really tangible that we can do. It's not hopeless.
Yeah.
And so many of the folks that are afraid, we're afraid because we really do care about maximizing the benefit we can do for our communities and minimizing the harm. And I really trust the people around us feel that. So there may be folks who cancel us, but I think there are also going to be folks who stick around with us and support us to do better and love us through the process. So I think we just need to invest in our relationships with the people who will do that for us and trust that that can get us through all kinds of storms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, totally, 100%. Yeah. Like, what are we without our people in our corner supporting us and having that kind of compassion that we need to work through the shame that would inevitably come? And yeah, like, to your point, it's so hard. The thing that we can do is say. The thing that we can do is come back. The thing that we can do is be in the room when people are saying, like, what that person said was shit and you're that person.
Yeah.
You know, taking the L and really being humbling yourself enough to recognize that you made that mistake. It could have been other people, and this is an opportunity to learn about how much more you need to grow.
Exactly. You know? So I want to finish by talking about our Women of Color of the Week.
Plural?
Yes, cool. It's a group.
Nice.
It's the Gulabi Gang. I hope I said that right. There might be some heavy sighs coming from my ancestors right now. It's a network of women who operate across northern India. I bet you've seen pictures of them on social media. It's a bunch of badass women in pink saris with sticks.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So this group sprung up in regions in India where there's widespread violence against women and girls, with very little ever being done about it, and particularly when the victims belong to lower castes. And these women decided that they wouldn't sit by and watch harm being done anymore. And so they formed these groups where people could come to them and tell them about harm that was happening. And they, as a group, would work to solve the problems using all kinds of tactics, up to and including using violence to stop predators from enacting further violence against their victims.
Wow, so they were super brave.
So brave. Yeah. And it's so incredible to see what they've been able to accomplish by forming these groups and by having this diversity of tactics, including violence. These groups have gained more and more support among all genders, and they've even gone beyond the issue of violence against women to more general human rights abuses and violence. They also started doing community service to help alleviate the effects of poverty and empower women to be economically self-sufficient. And the reason that I'm featuring them in this context is that this is an innovative way that communities have come together to address harm. Because finding alternatives to call-out culture, to me, it isn't about being more peaceful necessarily.
No.
It isn't about quote unquote forgiving necessarily. To me, it's about coming together as a community to go beyond just naming harm and actually finding ways that we can stop it and prevent it from happening again, no matter what it takes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.